It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm your host, Lisa Keller. My guests today are congressional candidates Nick Begich and Mary Peltola. I reached out to the Sarah Palin campaign three times, but never received a response. In my interviews with Nick and Mary, I asked questions sourced from four leaders in the outdoor industry in Alaska: Mary Goddard of Sustainable Southeast Partnership, Steve Cleary of Alaska Trails, Lee Hart of Alaska Outdoor Alliance, and Keegan Randall of Nordic Ski Association of Anchorage. We also chatted about their own personal experiences in the outdoors, what makes the Alaska outdoors special, and where they are happiest in the Alaska outdoors. Keep listening for more on Outdoor Explorer. This is Outdoor Explorer. I'm your host, Lisa Keller. My guest in this segment of today's show is U.S. Congressional candidate Nick Begich. Welcome to Outdoor Explorer, Nick.
Hey, great being here. Thanks for having me.
So I would first like to start with you just telling me about your outdoor life as a child. Like, what did you enjoy doing as a kid outside, and what kind of, you know, you were exploring a different place than Alaska, perhaps, for most of that, but that's interesting too.
Yeah, it was a mix. Recall times in Alaska at a young age. I remember there was one day my dad actually took me out of, might have been first grade. I was in school. He came, picked me up and said, we're going to go do some things outside of school today. And we went out and drove what felt like forever as a kid and staked a gold claim.
Oh, wow. That's really cool.
It was really cool. He did that another time. And we went down to an operating placer gold mine. And he was showing me some of the gold nuggets that they'd taken out of the ground. And it was really amazing, just getting a taste of Alaska wilderness, you know, how you can develop the state and coexist with the state, and some of the remoteness of the state too. Mm-hmm. And that was probably one of my earliest memories of going out and enjoying some of the Alaska wilderness areas, wild areas. Grew up in Florida and spent a little time between Alaska and Florida in Denver. I remember being in Boy Scout camp and enjoying some of the things that that you do when you're young and you go up into the woods and you get to experience how to coexist in the outdoors and deal with all of the challenges that accompany that. And a lot of formative experiences in the outdoors. It's been great coming back to Alaska. I've been here almost 20 years now. I've got a 10-year-old son, and going out and enjoying sort of the same things, doing some of the same things that my dad did with me when I was a young man, young boy. It's been a lot of fun.
What is the difference between like being outside in Florida and being outside in Alaska?
Well, in Florida, it's hot, swampy sort of weather. You got to watch for snakes and bugs.
Yeah. I mean, we are so lucky up here. We don't have to worry about that stuff.
That's right. The mosquitoes up here are a whole lot larger, as we know.
They have mosquito problems there though, too, don't
they? They do. And they carry diseases down there.
Yeah. Like Zika. And
that's right. Yeah. All sorts of strange things. And it's definitely different. One of the things that I love up here is you've got the ability to go fishing. You know, you've got the ability to go hunting. You've got the ability to go hiking. Up here, you can actually get lost hiking. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yes, you can. Many people do.
Yeah. In fact, I've got some property actually with my father, Nick, out in the Wrangell-St. Elias National Park.
Oh, beautiful.
And just beautiful, beautiful area. We've got about 820 acres mm-hmm. of land out there. On one of the drainages into the Katsina. Mm-hmm. And we've been out there, we've hiked in, we've taken a helicopter in. And when you're there, if it weren't for a plane flying over once in a while, you wouldn't see another person at all. Yeah. And you start to gain a real respect for the outdoors when you're in those types of environments. and recognize that you're just one small piece of a really big puzzle. Mm-hmm. And that's important for people to remember. And I think Alaska reminds us of that on a regular basis.
Absolutely. We're so big. Is that part of what drew you back to Alaska? I mean, your family is here, obviously a lot of your family's here, but was it just that being able to live an outdoor life differently than you can in Florida?
I think that's part of it. And I tell people, in fact, I saw some people yesterday. I'm out shaking hands a lot. I'm in the communities. I'm saying hi to folks. I'm listening to them. And there were some folks who were Alaska residents who had some family up from the South. And I turned and I looked at Bear Mountain, because we were out at Oberg Park, and I look at Bear Mountain and I said, you're not going to see that back home. Yeah. And they said, we were just talking about that. We don't know if we can go back home. And I think that's sort of what draws people in, a lot of people in to Alaska, is just the majesty and the beauty of the natural environment, the natural resource that we have that we take for granted so many times.
And I remember my brother having a girlfriend come up during college, and he went to college in California. And it was one summer, and I remember her coming up here and just being like in awe of the Chugach, you know. Yes. And we had just taken it for granted, being in it since we were kids. It's always there. But once you have people from outside come in, it just does open your eyes to how special Alaska is.
It really does. And I think once you acclimate to it, there's no going back.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I've left Alaska and come back a couple times. <That's right. laughs> I can't stay away.
That's right. Exactly.
It does get in your bones for sure.
Yes. Yeah. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, you know, it's amazing too. As I travel throughout the state, and I talk to people throughout various walks of life, various regions. But what you really gain an appreciation for, I think, as a candidate, is, you know, we've got a lot of natural resources in the state. But one of the resources that we really don't talk enough about is the appeal that draws visitors and tourists to Alaska. And that appeal is an important part of our economic engine today. And I think that preserving that appeal is an important aspect of everything that we do in Alaska, making sure that this remains a great place for people to visit and enjoy. I think it's good for us. I think it's good for the country.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a great start off to the four questions I have from you, from the leaders in the outdoor industry here in Alaska. And so the first question is from Mary Goddard. She's with the Sustainable Southeast Partnership. And she asks, as Alaskans, we are so connected to outdoor life. Does this cause you to be an advocate for our environment, our wildlife, our way of living here in Alaska? And if so, in what ways?
Yes, absolutely. And I think that prior comment kind of speaks to some of that. I believe that, you know, making sure that we are doing things in an environmentally responsible manner. You know, we're an interesting part of the world in that we are incredibly blessed with mineral resources and traditional energy resources and alternative energy resources here in Alaska. And we need to take advantage of those things, but we also need to make sure that we are managing the environment and wildlife populations and all of these other sustainable aspects of the environment and our economy. And we talk a lot about fishing as it relates to some of these issues. And I talk with folks in the sport fishing industry, commercial fishing industry, folks who rely on the subsistence that these fisheries provide. And it's really, really important. It's always on people's minds, and it should be, that we need to coexist with these natural blessings that we have here in Alaska. At the same time that we're considering how best to approach some of these other sort of one-time mineral and traditional energy resources as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And by the way, too, this is like not part of the program, but I'm just going to go through here and not really offer much comment on any of these questions.
Sure.
So,
yeah.
Unless there's
yeah.
a clarification. So, because like I said, the fun part is talking just about the outdoors. So, Okay. From Steve Cleary of Alaska Trails, in Congress, how will you fund outdoor recreation in Alaska, including infrastructure such as trail building and maintenance, trailhead parking, and other outdoor recreation opportunities?
Yes, those are really important. If you're going to enjoy the parklands that we have in Alaska, it's important that you've got the appropriate infrastructure to do so, that you've got the right entry locations into parks, and that you also are making sure that appropriate safety infrastructure is in place as well. Trail maintenance is a part of that. Having appropriate levels of parking at trailheads is a part of that. But there's other infrastructure investments that need to be made as well, so that you've got a good safety profile. I mean, many times we talked a moment ago about Wrangell-St. Elias National Park, one of many parks in the state, but it's also the largest national park in the United States. And quite frequently, there are people, you know, that have gone missing in that park and they're just gone. And it's not uncommon in Alaska for that to happen. I mean, it can even happen really close to major population centers. In fact, there was a gentleman that disappeared out in Girdwood, hiking out near Alyeska out there.
In the Winter Creek Trail, yeah.
Yes, yeah. So I think it's important that we have good, solid trail maintenance. It's a safety issue, and it allows people to better enjoy the resources that Alaska has to offer. I think that's really important.
And you're familiar with, because Steve Cleary with Alaska Trails, they're the big proponent of the Alaska Long Trail.
Oh, yeah. I love that. I love that concept. I think it's a great concept because, you know, there are other long trails in the United States, probably the most famous of which is the Appalachian Trail. And, you know, it brings people in. It's a great way to really dive deep on the Alaska experience. And I think that when you consider the profile of people who come to Alaska, people come here for all kinds of different reasons. They come here to see different things and experience different aspects of Alaska. You know, the most famous aspect of Alaskan tourism is really the cruise industry, but there's so much more that people come to enjoy about Alaska, and having a robust long trail, safe, but robust long trail system in Alaska, I think is a great addition to the portfolio of experiences that we have to provide here in Alaska.
Yeah, I'm really excited about it. It's almost like, oh, why hasn't this happened earlier? But then again, you think, oh, we've only been a state since 1959. So we're kind of playing catch up on some of this stuff, you know?
Yes.
So I don't know if that will, I doubt that will be completed in my lifetime, but I think it's a great thing for my family and for all of Alaska to have that in the future. So,
yeah.
Okay. From Lee Hart of Alaska Outdoor Alliance. This is a long question. Pristine and wild lands and waters are natural assets that attract and keep people in Alaska. Investing in this $3.2 billion economic sector can yield a year-round homegrown workforce, sustain communities that are gateways to public lands, and improve the mental, physical, and economic well-being of Alaskans. Describe how your thinking priorities would compare or contrast with those of Congressman Young, who shaped so much natural resource policy during his lengthy tenure in office.
Yeah, so I think that Congressman Young, he did so much for the state. And, you know, he's the longest serving Republican in U.S. history. You know, he spent nearly 50 years in office, and he was in office prior to that, even going back to his time as mayor of Fort Yukon. So he had a unique perspective on Alaska. And what he told me personally was that it's a big job. You're representing people from all over the state, from different walks of life, from different regions, different economic engines, different needs and backgrounds. And, you know, you really can't reflect the needs of each community if you haven't gone out and taken the time to meet the people in those communities. And I think when we look at Alaska as a whole, it's important to recognize that we cannot paint the state with one broad brush. There's different topologies, there's different regional character and cultural considerations that need to be made. And so as we think about how to best preserve and conserve the resources, the natural resources of Alaska, we need to do that in a regional manner, in my view, that respects the cultural norms of the region, that recognizes what sort of an innate advantages of each area are, and how we can best utilize those for the maximum benefit of the people of this state and our nation.
I think that is what has to be one of the most unusual things about Alaska, compared to other states, at least, is just even the geography is so different, you know, yes. And we all get in our little bubbles in the state. And I was thinking about that in terms of like Southeast. I think Southeast gets forgotten quite a bit. We kind of look, and the Aleutians, we kind of just look at our own little spot here and go from there. But yeah, to look at everybody in a different, we're almost like five different states in terms of
we our really needs. Are.
Yeah.
Yeah, we really are. In some respects, you know, we're almost like different countries mm-hmm. in some ways.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we have to recognize that. And it's difficult to recognize too, because the state isn't as accessible as many other places on earth, right? You know, mm-hmm. if you want to go to Southeast, you're going to take a boat or a plane. Mm-hmm. It's very hard to access most of Southeast by road. And it's very difficult to access much of Western and Northern Alaska by road. You can't do it. And certainly the Aleutians, you can't do that. So yeah. If you don't have reasons to go out to those places, a lot of times you just don't go. And most Alaskans, interestingly enough, will not have traveled to these various regions of the state, even if they've been here 20, 30, 40 years. And I think that is something we need to remember. We need to recognize that while those populations on a relative basis are smaller, they represent a tremendous opportunity and economic engine for people in Alaska. You talk about the Aleutians, you talk about Western Alaska, this is where our fisheries are, right? And yeah. And they power so much of Alaska's economy. A big portion of Alaska's economy relies on that sustainable fishery. And so we cannot forget about those folks that live and work in those regions of the state.
I have to admit, as a lifelong Alaskan, that's like one of my biggest regrets so far in my life is I have not traveled much around the state. I've pretty much stayed in South Central, you know, but that's my goal. That's definitely my goal.
Yes.
To recreate in other parts of the state. Okay. The final question is from Keegan Randall with the North Ski Association of Anchorage. And she asks, a while back, Anchorage made a couple bids for the Winter Olympic Games. Do you see the value in Anchorage and Alaska hosting high-level national and international competitions? What impact does that have for our athletes and community locally? And what would that do for marketing Alaska as a winter sports city outside of Alaska?
So I love this question. I love this question because we have, in my opinion, we have a lot of development left to be done for winter sports. And I would love to see the Winter Olympics in Alaska. I think we have perfect location for it. I think it would draw a great deal of interest internationally to Alaska, which could be very beneficial for the state in multiple ways. And so I would say, let's continue to pursue it, and let's continue to pursue other international competitions for winter games in Alaska. We can continue to build up that infrastructure. It's encouraging to see so many athletes continue to compete on a world stage like Keegan Randall and others who are doing a tremendous job as ambassadors for the state and our nation. I'm excited about that opportunity. I think it presents a tremendous, not just economic opportunity, but again, a great chance for Alaska to showcase Alaska, right? Let's show the world what we've got to offer, and who knows what additional spinoff opportunities may come from that. We've seen, in fact, over the last, 10 or 15 years, sort of this peak of interest that people have, not just around the country, but around the world about Alaska. They want to, every show, you could almost create an entire series of channels that are just focused on Alaska because people are that interested in what we have to offer. And I say, let's double down on that. It's a huge opportunity for us.
It blows me away how many reality shows are based in Alaska. It is really crazy.
Yeah. I do question the reality of reality TV. But...
That's true. There was just a whole, I saw an article in maybe ADN or Alaska Public Media about the Brown family down in Southeast, and that, where were they, in Gustavus or someplace or in there? And the locals were just like, we don't want you here. Go away. You do not represent Alaska. You're from the lower 48.
Yeah, it is. It's funny. You know, these shows are interestingly scripted, but they are still a window, let's say, a window into Alaska life. And I think what's interesting too about those shows, you know, you've got a whole variety of different activities that are going on. You've got shows like Deadliest Catch, which shows some of the operational and risk aspects of operating in the Bering Sea. And then you've got folks like those, that family down in Gustavus or down in Southeast, trying to hew their life out of the wilderness. And then you've got hunting shows, and you've got Gold Rush, which was I'll do a little confession. I think I've seen at least 100 episodes of Gold Rush.
Oh, my dad's a big Gold Rush fan too.
I love that show. It's amazing. Yes.
You know, my new favorite show right now is Alone. Have you watched Alone?
I've not seen it.
Well, there's a guy last season who won it, who's from Alaska, from Red Dog, which is out by kind of by Bethel in that region, you know? And he went 100 days, and I mean, he could have gone longer. This dude is amazing. But yeah, I'm kind of angling to try to interview him because nobody's talked about him. I mean, he won $1 million because he survived 100 days.
I'm gonna have to look into this.
Yeah. And Alone is really crazy because they don't have a camera crew with them. They're doing all their own filming.
Oh, wow.
And so they get medical checks, and they have to check in, I think, once a day. But it is brutal.
That's intense.
And I'm kind of wondering why they haven't. They've had different locations around the world, but they haven't done a location in Alaska or in the United States. It's been in like mostly Canada. And in Patagonia and in Mongolia. And I'm wondering if there's too many local restrictions to what they need to do, because they have to hunt and fish and everything, you know, to survive. So,
right.
Anyway, check it out. It's really good.
I will. I'll check it out. Yeah.
There are a lot of Alaskans who end up on that show. There's always somebody from Alaska on the show. So,
well,
it's cool.
You know, one of the coolest sort of competitions that I've heard about in Alaska is the Alaska Wilderness Challenge.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I've had friends do that.
That's pretty tough.
That's pretty tough.
You know, if you're able to go through and complete that.
Yeah.
Very impressive. I mean, you know, it's if for folks who are watching, if you hadn't had an opportunity to learn about the Alaska Wilderness Challenge, check it out, Google it. It's very interesting what folks can go out and do.
Maybe it's sort of like Mount Marathon, in that Mount Marathon is all of a sudden starting to draw a lot of people from outside, like professional mountain runners and everything.
Yeah.
And maybe the Alaska Wilderness Challenge, because I just really do see a place for that even to become a show on its own, because it is pretty amazing.
It is. My understanding is you can bring whatever you can carry, and you start here, you end up here. However you get there is up to you, as long as it's under human power.
Mm-hmm.
And good luck.
Yeah. I think with the ability to like have drones and stuff now too, it'd be easier to film something like that. Like when it first started, you couldn't really, it'd be hard to bring a camera crew with you, you know?
Because the guys in the camera crew.
Yeah, exactly. They would have to be just total, you know, crazy, fit, wilderness people themselves to be able to be the camera crew, you know? So, the final question is back to me. And, I would like to know what your favorite activity to do in the outdoors is, and where is your happy place outside in Alaska?
Yeah. You know, I would say, it's hiking. I really enjoy hiking, and particularly at, my property in the Wrangles, when I can get out there. And I would say, if I were to have what we call a happy place, it'd be out there, because And I'll tell you why. It's not just because it's beautiful, and it is. It's because it's quiet. You know, having some peace and quiet, being out of cell phone range and having an opportunity to think and reflect. We just don't get those kinds of opportunities in modern life. And maybe that's one of the most amazing things about Alaska, is you do have a chance to go outside, reflect and think and just ponder life. And you get away from the Instagram reels and the Facebook updates and all the other things, and you can just be. And I think that's a piece that we are missing and we are losing in the modern day, in the race of technological progress. Mm-hmm. We're starting to lose ourselves, and we can't let that happen.
I love that. I think that is a great place to end this segment. Nick, thanks so much for joining me today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
You are listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. I'm your host, Lisa Keller. We're going to take a short break, and when we return, we'll hear from congressional candidate Mary Peltola.
You're listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. Find the show anytime as a free podcast in the iTunes Store, or connect with us online at alaskapublic.org.
Listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. I'm your host, Lisa Keller. My next guest is congressional candidate Mary Peltola. Welcome to Outdoor Explorer, Mary.
Thank you, Lisa. Good to be here.
So let's start with just a description of your outdoor life as a child.
Sure. Well, like all Alaskan kids, I grew up outdoors. I grew up, my family had a recreational dog mushing team. My older sister had won a George Atla dog at the grand opening of our new AC store in Bethel. Our old one had burned down, and so she happened to win a George Atla dog. And you can't have a George Atla dog without having a dog team. So we, for many years, we had a dog team and spent winters outdoors with the dogs. I grew up commercial salmon fishing on the Kuskokwim, and I actually started that in 1979 when I was about almost 6 years old. And my dad was a real penny pincher, and so he didn't want to hire a real crew member. So he would have my older sister and I take turns being his crew. And my job really was just to back the outboard motor out while he set the net. And so I grew up commercial fishing. When I was 12, I had a commercial permit put in my name. And by the time I was 14, if I didn't have crew show up or something like that, he would let me fish alone as long as he could see me from his boat. And I still subsistence fish, probably 2 or 3 days a week with my kids when the rivers open or when we have subsistence openings on the Kuskokwim. You know, my family, like most all families in Alaska, we take berry picking really seriously, wild berries, tundra berries. So I grew up doing that. And of course, I do that with my children now.
Mm-hmm. So let's dive right into the questions that I have for you from some outdoor leaders in Alaska. And the first question is from Mary Goddard. She's with the Sustainable Southeast Partnership. And her question is, as Alaskans, we are so connected to outdoor life. Does this cause you to be an advocate for our environment, our wildlife, our way of living here in Alaska? And if so, in what ways?
Yeah, you know, I'm from Western Alaska. And for those of us out west, our rivers really are our trails. And we really need to make sure that we're protecting the salmon and the wildlife that depend on clean water. And in Anchorage, where I also spend a lot of time, Anchorage is a real trails town. And hundreds of miles of trails are in this city, and hundreds more are in the Chugach State Park. I've been really encouraged to see that voters in Anchorage have consistently said yes to parks and trail bonds for 11 years in a row. And I just think that trails are really what make Anchorage a livable city.
That's been a big change in the last 11, or before that, before 11 years ago, there was not very much support of parks and rec bonds. And now that's really changed quite a bit here in Anchorage.
Yeah. And, you know, I also just want to say that in Congress, I will be a supporter of permanent protections for Bristol Bay, including permanently blocking the development of the pebble deposit, especially under the Clean Water Act.
Yeah, that definitely falls under our outdoor umbrella for sure.
Yeah.
The next question is from Steve Cleary from Alaska Trails. Mm-hmm. In Congress, how will you fund outdoor recreation in Alaska, including infrastructure such as trail building and maintenance, trailhead parking, and other outdoor recreation opportunities? And I'm going to add in here that since you brought up that rivers are trails, I definitely think he means river trails as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, trails are part of our federal transportation system. And I'm really looking forward to working with cyclist Pete Buttigieg, Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg. We really need to triple the funding for recreational trail programs, and that includes motorized trails. Much of rural Alaska depends on ATV trails for hunting and to get to places. The issue, we really need to increase funds in the Transportation Alternatives Program, which is the largest federal funding for trails, sidewalks, and ADA accessible paths. I was also really pleased to see that Senators Murkowski and Sullivan support legislation and funding for a new active transportation source, which will offer competitive grants to build the gaps in existing active transportation networks so that all of our systems are connected.
All right.
The one other thing I wanted to mention, and this is, and I'm sure folks in urban Alaska and in the Anchorage area know about the Campbell Creek Trail Crossing. It's been added to the AMATS five-year plan. Do you call it AMATS?
I'm not sure.
Federal,
I'm not
state, sure if- and municipal agency.
I'm not really sure about that. And I'm also, tell me about the Campbell Creek Trail Crossing. I'm not sure if I know about that.
Okay, so the Missing Connect, it's a 33-mile destination trail that connects all of Anchorage. And the last piece is the Moose Loop.
Yeah.
So I know that the Anchorage Park Foundation has been working on that for years, and it's looking like it's finally coming together. And of course, in Congress, I'll continue to advocate for funding for our trails. There's programs like the Recreational Trails, Land and Water Conservation Fund, and Federal Lands Access. Of course, I'll continue to be an advocate for bringing this type of funding home. So many people move to Alaska for the scenery and the trails and access to the outdoors. Trails are really great for our economy. They create jobs and increase tourism. Like, one of the things about Anchorage is everybody has to hike to Flat Top when they come to town or at the beginning of the season. My kids have certainly enjoyed that trail a great deal. And trails are so good for our physical and mental health. I'm really excited to see the possibility of the Alaska Long Trail coming together from Seward to Fairbanks, but they are really expensive here in Alaska because of our terrain and how wild it is here. So we really have to make sure that we're getting federal dollars to support new infrastructure.
And trails are definitely like a way to attract a younger workforce here that doesn't have to go into an office. They can work out of their home. And I think that is a big draw if we're supporting our trails here to draw those people in as well.
Absolutely. Young people are so much less concerned with material acquisition. They're so much more tuned in to activities and doing things outdoors and really healthy living and balance. So I think that for attracting a younger workforce in Alaska and keeping our young people in Alaska, we've got to keep making the outdoors accessible.
So the next question is from Lee Hart. She's with Alaska Outdoor Alliance. This is a long question. Pristine and wild lands and waters are natural assets that attract and keep people in Alaska. It's kind of like what we were just talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Investing in this $3.2 billion economic sector can yield a year-round homegrown workforce, sustain communities that are gateways to public lands, and improve the mental, physical, and economic well-being of Alaskans. Describe how your thinking priorities would compare or contrast with those of Congressman Young, who shaped so much natural resource policy during his lengthy tenure in office.
Sure. Don Young was so successful in bringing huge dollars to the state of Alaska for transportation. We all remember that TILU bill that he championed and was successful in nailing down. I definitely support more funding for our ferry system and our marine highway system and using waterways as trails and economic drivers. Sustainable tourism and jobs, bringing trails, really is the way of the future. And I think that we need to make sure we're working with Native leaders to develop access to Native lands as well, Native corporation lands. One great example is Prince of Wales Island down in Southeast has a lot of old logging roads that are now being used for bike tours. And Huna and Juneau have invested in better docks and ports. And this really is helping local small businesses have sustainability in their transportation to their to these new economic stimulators. And these type of things are just really critical going forward. Don voted to support that Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act that brought money back to Alaska, and it included money for trails. I would love to continue Don's tradition of bringing in federal money to Alaska. And I will definitely make sure that new jobs go to Alaskan workers and not out of state labor. That's one of the big things I'm focused on.
What steps can you take to make that happen?
Well, I think project labor agreements. I think that we can have agreements and minimums for local hire and training local folks and apprenticeship programs. I think those are all really key pieces as we develop these infrastructure packages and invest money in infrastructure in Alaska and building these capital projects.
The final question today is from Keegan Randall. She's with the Nordic Ski Association of Anchorage. She's the executive director. And this is a slightly different than the other questions. A while back, Anchorage made a couple of bids for the Winter Olympic Games. It has been a long time back. Do you see the value in Anchorage and Alaska hosting high-level national and international competitions? What impact does that have for our athletes and community locally? And what would that do for marketing Alaska as a winter sports city outside of Alaska?
Yeah, you know, Anchorage trails train Olympic athletes and provide experiences for new or beginning athletes as well. I don't think there's any reason why Anchorage and Alaska shouldn't be a year-round destination for outdoor adventures. Skiing, fat tire biking, dog mushing, skating, watching the Northern Lights, those are all really great, you know, and Alaska is just so perfect for these types of events. You know, I do think it would be great if Anchorage bid and won on getting the Winter Olympic Games here. We have so many talented athletes, and it would be an amazing thing for our young people to have that experience. This would also bring a great deal of federal dollars into Alaska. It would create jobs and really be a boost to our economy. The only concern I really have is in terms of infrastructure and making sure we had accommodations for everyone. You know, another thing I just, and this isn't necessarily as much of a federal issue, but it would be great if we could get the state of Alaska to invest more in outdoor recreation infrastructure. I was very disappointed to see some of the vetoes of the Alaska Long Trail, but the fact that the Anchorage projects were funded and voters consistently support bonds gives me confidence that people want trails and we should be a contender for an Olympic bid.
Well, I think it's kind of interesting too, and I'm not sure if you probably know about this, but that there's going to be an Ironman in Juneau, and it's just in a couple of weeks. And I mean, there's a, like, housing crunch there. People can't find a place to stay. And, you know, for every one athlete in an Ironman race, they usually, I think they bring in an average of 2.5 people with them. So 1500 people in an Ironman race, you know, you're looking at, you know, 3, 4, 5,000 people who are coming in with them. Maybe, I mean, Juneau's a great location, but it seems like South Central would be the place in terms of infrastructure to be able to handle such a large, because Ironman's really an international event.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I agree. Anchorage is really set up to host people, just making sure we had the facilities to host, you know, Olympic size is huge, but Ironman I think is much more doable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it's a little bit of a test to see what's going to happen. It'll be interesting to see. So I'm glad Ironman's here. It's about time that Alaska is on the rotation.
Yeah.
So we learned a little bit about what you, how you grew up as a child and the outdoor activities you did. And, are you living in Anchorage right now?
No, I live in Bethel, but you know, okay, it's campaign season and Anchorage really is kind of the center of the Alaskan universe. So many things are based in Anchorage, and the, my internet and connectivity is so much better in Anchorage. And sometimes it's just a real challenge being out in Bethel, making things like this happen.
Well, I'm being kind of Anchorage centric right now anyway, and Outdoor Explorers meant for the whole state, but what kind of things do you do now as an adult outside besides the things that you've done before, commercial fishing, berry picking, are you a big hiker or do you fat bike? Do you do any of those things? Do you ski?
No, you know, my outdoor life is really based around subsistence. And I think that's what you will find with most folks who are from the bush and are Alaska Native. My daughter and I have been exploring Anchorage in different ways over the years. I've taken her ice skating down at Westchester Lagoon in Anchorage. My kids have done skiing around Anchorage. But where I'm most comfortable is out harvesting, and that's really salmon and berries for me. And my, you know, kind of sacred place that I spend a lot of time is a place that it's the mouth of the Gweek River. It's a tributary of the Kuskokwim, and my mom's grandparents lived there year round when she was a child. They left to go to squirrel parka camp in the spring to catch, to harvest squirrel parkas. Parka squirrels, I should say, for their parkas. And other than that, they really lived at this non-salmon bearing tributary, but salmon go past there on their way to their spawning streams. And so it's the place where I grew up commercial fishing and subsistence fishing. And I just kind of gravitate to that place now. It's a place of real bounty. So, you know, and just having that place-based relationship, and it's one that my generations of my family before me were just really tied to that place.
So that's your happy place outside in Alaska.
That is my happy place. And what I have found is I'm not great at meditating, and kind of the closest I come to meditating is salmon fishing and berry picking, because you really have to be in the moment to do those things well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you know, you think about it, like I really like that your life is based around being outside. Like, that is the whole purpose of your life, and collecting food to eat and nourish yourself. And here in Anchorage, it's definitely not that way. Like, people are so focused on just getting out and doing activities that aren't really focused around life sustaining things.
Well, and you know, if you have a history of getting your food from, you know, not wild places off the land, I think regardless of what you're doing outside, there are so many benefits, health benefits to being outdoors. There's so many mental health benefits and physical health benefits. I just can't say enough good things about being outdoors and being outdoors with your family in whatever way is comfortable for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I figured that this would be fun instead of having to be Yeah.
Well, and it's, you know, one of the funny things when I, you know, when you're in high school, you just overhear things and try them on. And I had heard, this was like in Colorado, I was going to college in Colorado, and it was either my senior year of high school or college. And I remember telling my dad, oh, I'm not an outdoor person. I really enjoy being indoors. And he busted out laughing. There are some moments where I really remember my dad laughing, and he just laughed so hard. And he said, that is not true. You are miserable when you don't get outside. Like, you're the most outdoor person I've ever known. And yep. You know, when you're 18 or 19 and you don't really know yourself and you're trying on all these different identities, I remember just thinking, yeah, that's actually really true. I don't like being indoors. Yeah. Like, and it's just, it's so funny when you are young, like, you know, just all the different identities you try on. And that one, just the indoor me, just that didn't fly for one second. And another funny moment, my husband and I was like, there was some question. He's like, well, I just love that we both like to do things outdoors. And I said, well, what if I was faking it? And he said, ah, like, you could never fake that. You know, no, there is something so cathartic about being outside, and there's nothing that can replace it.
Yep. I mean, it is really one of the things I do is I run a running program at Highland Prison. And
excellent with the women there,
with the women there. And it's just, it just connects to, it doesn't connect to everybody. Not everybody's into it, but for some women, it just really means a lot. And, we've been starting and then having to pull back. We're pulled back right now because of COVID again. And, but when I was out there about a month and a half ago before they pulled us back. And the big thing that the women are missing right now is their recreation. They get an hour a day outside. Other than that, they're locked into their houses. No, not at all.
Well, and in Bethel and along our rivers, you know, for a lot of us, just going on a boat ride is very calming and soothing. And people often talk about, you know, oh, I just had the best day. We went for a beautiful boat ride. And or, you know, you really know it's the first day of a season when you get out and you're like, my favorite day of the year is when the ice breaks on the Kuskokwim. And my second favorite day of the year is my first boat ride of the season.
Oh, wow.
No. And I think that's, you know, and when I have lived in the lower 48, the hardest thing about being down there is finding wild spaces or finding places where you feel like there aren't other people around, because they just, it's just not like Alaska where you can go right out of town and be in the wilderness.
Oh, we are so lucky. My parents live in Seattle. They live on in Magnolia. And so Discovery Park is really close to them, which is still very, you know, it's surrounded by urban stuff. But like every time I'm there, I'm like, I need to go walk or run in Discovery Park, because otherwise it's just so busy and full. You can hear all the railroad and the cars all the time. And
well, in every single town in Alaska, without exception, 5 minutes out of town, you're in the wilderness.
Yeah.
Juneau's a really good example of that. Mm. There are wild bears on every trail around Juneau, and you are in the wild. Mm-hmm. So that's just something I think we take for granted, but we shouldn't. We should really be working hard to preserve that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We live in a very special place. We are so lucky.
We are so blessed.
Yep.
So lucky. So thank you so much, Lisa. This really has been fun. I think this has been the best interview I've done yet on the campaign.
Oh, yay. I love hearing that. That's so awesome. I'm glad the recording is still going.
Well, and there is nothing that unifies Alaskans like our love for the outdoors and our reliance on the wild and just the bounty of the land. So we're all connected through our relationships, you know, to the land in this place.
Yeah. I mean, you obviously your life here goes back hundreds, thousands of years. My parents came up in 1963, and, you know, I've always felt the connection to this land that I could never leave it. you know?
Yeah. And, you know, and my dad moved here from Nebraska in the 1960s, mm-hmm. and he grew up outdoors. He grew up farming, and it was really important to him that we had a tie to land and animals, like through our dog team. And, you know, he already had this sense of loss because they were never able to fish for salmon in Nebraska. Yeah. And he, his family owned a gillnet, but it was forbidden to even own it. And so it was like up in the rafter in a barn and no one could even talk about it because yeah. it was illegal to own a gillnet. And growing up on the Kuskokwim, that really blew my mind. And I am worried. I didn't really think in my lifetime I'd witness what I think is an ecosystem collapse. But I think, you know, before I was even a grandmother, we're worried. And I am a grandmother now, but for 13 years on the Kuskokwim, we've been living around these very depressed salmon returns and having to restrict ourselves and restrict our own harvest because we know that the escapement is more critical now than it ever has been. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, I think you have kids about the same age as I'm a grandma too. So just a recent grandma last year and a half. And you have like Gen Z kids, right? Like that's
and
my
millennials.
Kids. Yeah. yeah. And they're just, especially the Gen Zers, they don't see much hope.
Yeah, no, it's very concerning. And my two older boys are in the Coast Guard and they grew up outdoors, of course, and on the river, which made it a real natural fit for them to go into the Coast Guard because mm-hmm. that work is really outdoor work as well. But no, there's just, and that's the reason I'm running is I really want to leave the world a better place for these upcoming generations than leaving them holding the bag.
Mm-hmm. My daughter will love that.
Good.
Okay, my Gen good. Z daughter.
Good.
Well, Mary, thank you so much for joining me today. I know you're really in a busy time right now, and I'm really glad that you took the time to talk to Outdoor Explorer.
Thank you so much, Lisa. I really enjoyed this. This was a really fun interview. Thank you.
And now we'd like to play for you an episode of Alaska Public Media's award-winning video series, Indie Alaska. This episode is about how building traditional kayaks is rejuvenating Alaskan culture.
One of our favorite sayings is, when the tide is out, the table is set, because you know just so much of our food comes from the ocean. And that's part of the reason why this kayak is so important, because that was one of our primary methods of fishing, hunting for seal. In some regions, we actually hunted whale. Today, we're working on a one-man kayak.
We're making this kayak for the Kenai Fjords National Park Service. I would expect the Park Service is going to use this as a display. But it is going to be fully functional when we hand it over. So if they really wanted to, they could use it. Ultimately, I mean, this is a piece of art, but it's a piece of art with a functional purpose.
You know, going through school, Indigenous peoples, you know, the Alaska Natives, the American Indians, it was always regarded as this is the historical tribe. You know, these are the people that used to live here. And you know, some groups are making great strides and reminding people that we're still here. This is our contribution, trying to showcase that we're still here, our culture is still alive, and you know, we can still make amazing things. Traditionally, every young man would build his own kayak. These were traditionally built, scaled to the person at a full length of 3.5 times the builder's arm length. The one that we're working on today is just shy of 17 foot. This is pine. Traditionally, it would be done with red or yellow cedar, primarily driftwood. But the most traditional thing to do is to work with what you have. What we've got is pine.
The Sukhwek people are from the, it's called the Chugach region, and it spans from Cordova, which is the Eyak people, through the Prince William Sound, and down to the Lower Cook Inlet. So one of the most distinctive differences between, say, a Sukhwek-style kayak and a Yupik-style kayak is the bow. For Sukhwek-style, we have a very sharp, up-pointed bow that's designed to cut through the waves as well as redirect water away from the pilot.
The bow is the front of the ship, the front of the kayak.
It can't be recreated through bending or carving. It has to be grown naturally. And so the best part of the tree to get that from is the knee as part of the root of the tree. So this is just a perfect piece that we're going to actually harvest here in Seward with our chainsaw.
Taking as much of the wood out that we can, it's a very physically intensive process because it can take quite a long time, but it's also a great practice for teaching kids how to use the chisels.
The idea is to get as many people involved as possible. If the only people that are learning how to make this kayak is, you know, the two masters and the two apprentices, then this is a cultural practice that will disappear.
We're short one person, can't quite make that up, even if we had worked, just a ton of overtime. I think we're gonna have to come back next year and finish it.
You know, my day job is human resources, so it's working on a computer, talking to people over the phone. But when I'm working on a kayak, you know, I can actually see the project that I'm building. I can feel it, you know, effectively coming to life from these raw materials.
That's it for today's show. Thanks to my guests, Nick Begage and Mary Peltola. You can find pictures of Nick and Mary and links to their websites on the Outdoor Explorer page at alaskapublic.org. In the upcoming primary election on Tuesday, August 16th, Nick and Mary will be on the ranked choice special election ballot to fill the remainder of Don Young's seat for this term. They will also be on the primary ballot for the new congressional term that starts in January. The primary election for the new congressional term is a pick one candidate only to determine the four candidates who will then be ranked choice in the general election in November. The show is produced by Eric Bork. My name is Lisa Keller. And from all of our hosts here at Outdoor Explorer, thanks for listening, and we'll see you outside.
Outdoor Explorer is a production of KSKA Public Radio in Anchorage, Alaska. Theme music is by Portugal, The Man. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect the station or its underwriters. You can find Outdoor Explorer on Facebook and in your favorite podcast app. To see what's coming up on Outdoor Explorer and add your voice to the conversation, go to our website at alaskapublic.org.
Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.